welcome to another special edition of The Exchange, PEI's public affairs podcast presented by Confederation Group. I'm Sam McPhail, and earlier today I was joined by my co-host Blake Doyle, as well as the Member of Parliament for Charlottetown, Mr. Sean Casey. As mentioned in the last several episodes, we'll be producing more frequent content with perspectives from community leaders to get their take on the ongoing COVID-19 outbreak and what it will mean for Islanders and Canadians alike. Sean discussed in detail the federal government's $82 billion stimulus package that was announced by Prime Minister Justin Trudeau last week, how his schedule has changed throughout all of this, and even the return of CBC Compass. Without giving away much more, I'll now turn it over to our interview with Sean Casey. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Exchange. We've been kind of pumping out content every day, and today we're joined by MP for Charlottetown, Sean Casey. Thanks for coming on, Sean.
Thanks for having me on.
We're glad to have you. So to start off, Sean, we probably want to, this is kind of unprecedented times with COVID-19. We want to kind of get a sense of the day in the life of an MP. So what do you go through during the day when there's constant calls with Ottawa? They just finished sitting, I guess, a couple hours ago. So what it's like as an MP during a pandemic such as this?
Well, probably the best way to answer that is to draw the contrast. So before COVID-19, before self-isolation, the day of an MP would be spent as a slave to your calendar and going where the people are. So there'd be any number of meetings, announcements, and gatherings where people are, where you would attend for the primary purpose of listening, so that you're able to take the concerns of your constituents back to Ottawa. So all that's changed. Now the day of this MP involves being on the phone or looking at a screen, because that's how we interact now. There's no shortage of briefings with the COVID committee. They happen every single day by conference call. And other than that, there's a steady stream of phone calls and emails of people wanting to know what the government is doing for them to help get them through this. So the level of anxiety is enhanced, and of course, by necessity, the level of social contact. And for an MP, there's a ton of that is reduced. All of the contact is now electronically.
Right. Sorry, just a bit of a pause there. So is there certain aspects, I guess, that, like in Ottawa this morning, they passed the legislation to kind of let the government govern. Was it just kind of MPs close to the central region, so closer to Ottawa, that kind of got the call and say you have to show up to vote for this?
Yes. So this is a good example of parties working together. So before there was a decision made to suspend Parliament and send everyone home, the parties came to an agreement that if it was necessary to recall Parliament, that we'd essentially have a pairing arrangement. So there was an agreement that there would be a limited number of MPs return. Everyone agreed only to send some, and they agreed on numbers which maintained the proportions of the sitting in the House. So the number they came up with was 30. I saw a report today that said it was 32, but it was around that. But the proportion of MPs would be about the same. So there'd be one or two less than 50% of Liberals, and then representation from each of the other parties. So basically the people that were there on each side were there because they had a leadership role. There was a disproportionate number of cabinet ministers on the Liberal side, but the idea was, in terms of non-cabinet ministers, they were people that didn't have to get on a plane and that were in the area. So the goal was to respect the public health advice, maintain the proportional standings in the House, and abide by the agreement that had been reached among the House leaders.
Right. And you guys announced, well, I guess so, Trudeau, so go ahead, Blake. Choppy. So you guys announced a pretty big stimulus package last week, or I guess Trudeau would have. Oh, Blake, sorry, you kind of cut it there for a second.
Yeah, I'll get a different headset
here, maybe. So I guess we'll focus on the stimulus package. Can you kind of give us a rundown of what the stimulus package contains and how much is it?
So there's $27 billion in direct transfers to individuals. The total stimulus package, when you take into account the increased capacity for lending to businesses and mortgage deferrals, and also the deferral of taxes for businesses and individuals, the total package is $82 billion. So in terms of those deferrals, the idea is, instead of having that money being sent to the government, keep it in the economy for a few more months at a time when having that money in the economy is so important. So the package that's been put together on the side of individuals essentially involves the elimination of the 1 week waiting period for EI, the introduction of something called an emergency support benefit. So those who don't qualify for EI do qualify for some support, specifically $900 every 2 weeks for the next 3 months. There is an emergency care benefit, which is essentially for those that have been sent home or need to be at home. It aligns with the EI sickness benefits. A doubling of the Canada Child Benefit, a doubling of the HST, GST rebates for low-income Canadians, a deferral of 6 months for those who have mortgages, a delay in when taxes need to be filed by individuals to the 1st of June, a six-month moratorium on repayment of Canada student loans. So those are some of the measures for individuals. For businesses, we constantly hear from business what a burden it is to have to pay payroll taxes. So essentially, we've given them a holiday. And the way that we've done that, the most efficient way to do that, as far as we were concerned, was by giving a 10% wage subsidy. And the way the subsidy works is, when you submit your payroll to the federal government, instead of submitting the full amount, you hold back for yourself, for your business, 10% up to $1,375 per employee. So there's a 10% wage subsidy. There's an injection of borrowing capacity through the Export Development Corporation and the Business Development Bank, all of which is administered through businesses, through the bank that businesses typically use. But this is essentially to help businesses through this rough period. So banks have more lending capacity thanks to an injection from the federal government. A delay on having to pay taxes, a delay on having to file taxes are the other big pieces. And the one other thing is the work sharing arrangements. So there is right now a work sharing program that has basically been doubled. So the duration of these programs used to be 38 or 39 weeks, and now they're 76 weeks. And the way that works is right now, for those businesses that still have some demand, the demand has been reduced. Instead of laying people off, if they can have people share jobs and have a contribution from EI, there is a program in place to do that that has been bumped up. So that's kind of a snapshot of some of the things that were contained in the legislation that's now going through the House.
Did you want to jump in on anything on the stimulus, Blake? I know you've been itching
well,
for that.
Can you hear me? I don't know.
You're good now.
I'm okay now. Sorry, some technical problems. I don't have any criticisms for sure. One question I did ask, I wasn't sure as far as how the members vote. Is it by proxy, or do you get to electronically voice your position on different bills, or is the power just given to those that you've assigned before Parliament dissolved?
The only people that have a right to vote are those that are in Ottawa.
Okay.
So they are voting, and it raises a really interesting question, Blake, because part of the charm, I suppose, of Parliament is our continued observance of some of these archaic practices. They say you should never waste a good crisis. If one thing that comes out of this is that Parliament becomes modernized by the acceptance of technology and electronic voting and things like that, that would be a good thing. But we're not there, and we're not there for the process that's taking place right now. But having said that, the vote that took place a couple of hours ago was unanimous.
Okay, right. And it had to be unanimous to kind of get through, right?
Right, that was part and parcel of the deal that was reached by the House leaders to go along with a small representation of people in Parliament. So, if basically the agreement that was reached was okay, if we're going to govern with or if we're going to provide parliamentary oversight with 30 people instead of 338. Then it'll have to be unanimous. If those 30 people can't come to unanimity, we're going to have to call all 338 back and see what happens. And everyone wanted to avoid that. That would be pretty poor leadership. And ultimately, an agreement was reached and cooler heads prevailed.
As far as the bill that was introduced, I didn't check to see what was modified, but has the duration of the crisis been collapsed a little bit? Is that kind of some of the amendments that were made?
So I didn't stay up all night and watch the debate, and I haven't received a full briefing, but what I can tell you from the news media that I've read this morning is that was exactly the nature of the compromise. The view of the opposition, and I think quite frankly it's well founded, was that the government was overreaching. A proposal was put forward by the Bloc Québécois to limit the duration of the extraordinary powers on spending and taxation level adjustments to this September, and that was part and parcel of the compromise that was reached in order to obtain unanimity.
And the Liberals wanted to do a full year, did they not? They wanted to go until like
it was
this
actually
time next
21
year.
Months. And the opposition did their job by saying you're overreaching here. Yes, we're in a national crisis, but Parliament has a role to play, and the legislation wasn't consistent with that, and eventually they came to agreement on it.
We would have been in an election cycle by then, so I don't know if that it might not have looked best for optics if the government had passed that.
Yeah, and Sam, that's part of the political game of chicken. You know, because if a deal wasn't reached and Parliament was recalled and there was a vote, it would be a confidence vote, which would force an election. So these would be the types of things that were said in that room, I would guess.
Right. And like you said, you said never waste a good crisis, because typically, historically, anytime there is somewhat of a crisis, usually the governing party stands out as, let's say, not the hero, but it's hard to look bad when there's a crisis because you're implementing the stimulus, you're implementing things that are to help people. So I think that's kind of what government is realizing now, to say, okay, let's help as many people as we can, because down the road we will have an election and it might help us in that case.
Well, it's an excellent point, and it's all of the attention throughout this has been focused on the government. The Prime Minister is doing daily briefings, as are cabinet ministers, and opposition has a role to play to hold the government to account. But opposition is really, to date, has had a hard time establishing, reinforcing their relevance, because essentially everyone is on the same page and everyone recognizes that. So the recall of Parliament, that this was their moment to shine. This was their moment to assume some of the limelight. It appears that that they've done exactly that. The fact that they sat all night, as far as I'm concerned, means that they did their job. If the government overreached and the opposition brought them back, then that's the way it's supposed to work.
Yeah, and I like it. It was a short.
Oh,
go ahead. You're just breaking up a bit, Blake. Try again.
Well, I'm just going to say Sean is my MP, and I see Sean running all the time. In fact, if I had to outrun the virus with Sean, I know I wouldn't be able to keep up. But Sean, as far as fitness, and do you maintain your activity? Are you maintaining your fitness? Should people be maintaining their fitness in this environment? What's your thoughts on, I mean, you're a fairly active MP. You circle the neighborhood frequently.
Well, thanks, Blake. Let me answer it two ways. First of all, in terms of my own regime, for me, I run as much for my mental health as my physical health. So I enjoy the solitude. That's my thinking time when you see me out there circling the neighborhood. And it's something that I've done for years, and it keeps me level and it keeps me sane. And look, right now, these are strange times. As humans, we thrive on interaction, and that has been severely limited. I really think that whatever is the activity that is most comfortable for anyone, that's exactly what they should be doing, because consciously or subconsciously, this is a stressful, unusual time, and I don't think there's any better stress release than exercise. So I would encourage everyone to get out, get some fresh air, and do what's comfortable.
So would you have a favorite isolation activity? What do you like to do when you're to make the time go by?
Okay. So, well, I partly answered it. And, number one would be running. But when I'm passive, I'm a Sudoku nut.
Right.
So I'm sitting there on my phone or on my iPad trying to solve the daily puzzle.
Fair enough.
I might just ask a question about the stimulus. And just before we came on, I mentioned I did some back of napkin kind of calculation. The U.S. just announced a $2 trillion contribution to their economy to kickstart it. It's about $6,000 per person. The $82 billion federal contribution is $2,200 per person. So quite a bit more economic stimulus in the States, bigger economy. There's about $350 billion for small business, and it was suggested that could certainly be increased. I know everybody's struggling with this. The provincial government for sure are struggling. I know they're working in parity with the federal government to try to keep business active. And they're doing a lot of front end supporting the frontline people. My concern is business and a 10% rebate. And I look at it in the context of our environment, the 10% payroll rebate, employees already pay a percentage of employees' contributions on behalf of the employees. So I don't know how much of that the employers can keeping, because there are, I guess they're just keeping their own money. Is there potential for more stimulus to come? Because I really see if we can't get the demand repaired on the economy, we won't have an economy. Is there more conversation happening for more rollouts over time? I think that's my big concern from an economic perspective, and even the 10% in Sam's case. So internally, we've made a commitment. We've maintained payroll for 30 days. We're working to find recovery options. We're searching for revenue. We're completing projects we have. But a 10% wage reduction, although nice in normal times, won't keep people employed, at least in our organization. I guess what I'm looking for is sort of comfort. There's more to come.
Yeah, so I would start with this. In terms of comparator to the United States, there are many ways in which the United States has responded to this that we would not seek to emulate. I think the contrast between how the United States has handled this and how Canada has handled it is a source of national pride. But the other thing, the second part, and really what your question was, is whether there's the possibility or probability of more, and the answer is unequivocal, yes. The Prime Minister has been very clear that everything is on the table. The measures that have been taken to date, they will constantly be evaluated. This situation is so fluid that if this isn't going to be enough, there is capacity for more. And the legislation that was passed allows for that flexibility as well. So, and what what we have heard from many businesses is this is good as far as it goes. I'm not sure that it's going to save my business, and there are others that say, you know, I'm in a special case and you should look at it this way, you should look at it that way. So, and every single one of these things is being fed back into the COVID committee for whatever phase two was going to look like. But I do believe there is going to be a phase two or a second injection. Not sure what it's going to look like, but absolutely everything's on the table.
I think there's an unusual time. Just, I'm pretty pleased with the leadership that's being demonstrated both provincially and coordinated with federally. I think we're 18 months before there's a solution, so I don't know how the economy adapts to this, but keeping people engaged and certainly appreciate everything you're doing on behalf of your constituents, but everything the federal and provincial governments are doing to try to work in a pretty strange situation.
And people don't really realize that this is what happens during crisis for parliamentarians and for politicians. It's not all what it chopped up to be when you maybe put your name on the ballot the first time. You probably didn't imagine a worldwide health pandemic, I'm sure.
No, but you know, that's, you can't imagine, you can't foretell the future, but I mean, what we sign up for is to do the best we can to represent our constituents and to try to make a difference. And I'll give you a little anecdote, Sam. When we first became government, so I had spent 4 years in the third party. When we first became government, I was parliamentary secretary to the Minister of Justice, Jody Wilson-Raybould, and one of the first files that I had to handle that we were involved in was the amendments to the criminal code around medical assistance in dying. And the comment that you just made to me with regards to this crisis, I had people come up to me and say, oh my God, you poor soul, having to deal with that. And it's such a touchy issue. And it's so complicated. And you poor bugger, you're charged with carrying this thing. And I look back and I said, well, are you kidding me? This is exactly what I signed up for. This is something that's complicated, that has legal overtones, charter overtones, ethical overtones, religious overtones. This is exactly what I signed up for. And I would say the same thing with respect to this crisis. I mean, this is a time when government matters. This is a time when individual members of parliament get a chance to feed in the views, the anxieties, the insecurities of their constituents into the people at the core of decision-making power. So, not only is this an interesting time for members of parliament, this is something that we have to thrive on. This never before have people been watching us so closely and relying on us to do the right thing. So I'm frankly honored and pumped to be in that role.
And we certainly appreciate your leadership, because exactly this is the time when you can't really blame anybody, because this is what happened, but you rely on government for something, for leadership, and to come through with something. So I guess before we kind of wrap up, you've always been a political role model of mine, and I've known you since you first started running. I guess you just won your third election. When you were kind of going through the ranks, I guess, as a lawyer, and thought maybe I will be, and I guess you were president of the Liberal Party, yeah, too, but when you were going through the ranks as a lawyer, you were thinking probably, okay, maybe I have a shot at this. Did you have any political role models, I guess, growing up or going through the system that you thought, okay, I want to emulate what they do?
I had a ton of time for Sean Murphy, my predecessor, for sure. I idolized Joe Giz provincially. He was an inspiration. That was before putting my name on the ballot. And so what I would say to you is I've had the chance to work with some pretty amazing people. And top of that list, quite frankly, would be Bob Ray. When I was first elected and sitting there as a rookie in the third party, he was the interim leader and really held the Liberal Party together. And I don't think we would have had the platform to make the jump from third to first, but for the work of Bob Ray. I got to work very closely with Erwin Kotler. There were some key people in the early, before I put my name on the ballot, but probably as much or more so since. Percy Down has been a great source of sage counsel to me as well throughout my time in elected life.
Right on. And I guess you, a lot of, especially our PEI MPs and Percy have been kind of strong on the CBC Compass file. And that's good to know that that's coming back on today or tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it was quite a thing. I mean, it really, because CBC is a Crown corporation, the government can't dictate to them what they can and can't do. But what they did was so Toronto-centric, tone deaf, that they needed to hear the backlash, and they did. And the backlash came from our constituents, who was conveyed through and accepted and supported by the cabinet and frankly the prime minister in order for this to happen. I still think that Catherine Tate is going to be hauled before a parliamentary committee when this is done, and I hope to substitute into that committee really to get the message across in a direct and public way that, you know, at the time of a national crisis, the focus has to be on Canadians. And I really, really, I'm glad that we were able to pull it back, but it's unfortunate that we had to. So I don't think you've heard the last of this, and I'm glad that the political intervention resulted in CBC coming to their senses.
Do you have any other summaries to wrap up, Blake? I think we'll let John go.
No, I appreciate your time, Sean. I guess my only question, last question, I've got a bunch of kids. You've got children. Sam, I don't think you have any.
None that I know of.
You're socially isolating, but what's the future going to look like for children? I know I just finished the business kind of hook on this thing, but I just did my tax return recently, a couple of corporate tax returns, and it's so less advantageous to take the risk to operate a business now and try to grow and maintain passive income that can use for days like this. When we come out of this, will entrepreneurs want to, try to take these risks without the potential rewards that maybe have been removed in some respects? Is there potential for more stimulus to come to support business? I think you identified there is. I'm really, the tax policy that have come in might be changed. I know that's outside of your scope, but these are the things that I'm looking at to ensure that, hopefully my children have an environment they can be successful and thrive and contribute in the future. So a lot of loaded stuff in there, Sean, but I don't know if you want to respond to anything. I'm very delighted you came on, and I'm really pleased that you're providing leadership. The economy needs confidence. The citizens need confidence, and all levels of government have been there. So thank you.
Thanks, Blake. You know what? Every day when you go into Parliament, every day when you participate in the debates, what we have in mind is trying to make the country a better place for our kids. And this is a major moment for the country. And there are so many challenges that we'll be facing the next generation. The biggest one isn't economic, it's environmental. And we have a responsibility to our kids not to ruin the planet and set us on the right course. But by the same token, I mean, what we're doing now by necessity is we're plunging the Canadian economy and the world economy deep into debt. It's something that economists are unanimous that we have to do, but that money's going to have to be paid back. And that's going to be foisted upon our kids. So will the challenges of today result in the next generation being less willing to take risks? I'm not so sure. The challenges are sizable, but will it kill the entrepreneurial spirit? I hope not. And I prefer to think that it won't. So we're doing the best we can to with the interests of our kids and grandkids at heart, and history will judge us accordingly.
That's likely a whole other discussion, and we can have you back on to talk more about the effects after COVID-19. After it's settled down. So we appreciate your time, Sean. And we'll let you be on your way. I'm sure you have 1,000 phone calls coming in later today from Ottawa, but we appreciate your time. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Sam. Thanks, Blake.
Thank you, Sean. You didn't do a sort of technical espionage on my headset there earlier on? Anyway, thanks very much. Appreciate your time, Sean. You got lots to do, and very grateful you made time for us.
Thanks, Sean.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
That was our interview with Member of Parliament for Charlottetown, Sean Casey, and we're pretty thankful for his time today to come out and talk about what matters most to both residents of Charlottetown and Prince Edward Island as a whole. It should come as no surprise that PEI is a special place, and having the ability to ask a local politician without any hesitation at all to come on for an interview, it's pretty awesome that we have the ability to do this and that it is kind of that connectivity, the unique connectivity we have on Prince Edward Island. And even Sean was, before we clicked record, he took a little bit of criticism from a noted conservative, my co-host Blake Doyle, but he did it all in good humor and in good faith. The Exchange will continue to deliver content and updates for our listeners, so please stay tuned for further commentary from community leaders and even a bit of comical back and forth as was discussed. Sean even mentioned my tweet from a couple weeks ago about me remaining single throughout the outbreak of coronavirus, so it's pretty funny that he noted that. I'm Sam McPhail, and this has been another special edition of The Exchange presented by Confederation Group. In closing, wash your hands and stay the hell home. We'll talk to you next time.